The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
Hey, welcome back. The final hour live from Columbia. What a memorable afternoon this has been. One of the great days we have ever spent out on the road. So many fantastic guests. An enthusiastic South Carolina crowd, and we have another hour to go, and we appreciate you being here. We just had Shane Beamer and Dawn Staley on in the final, in the last hour. Many guests this hour as well. We begin in Tuscaloosa, where Cole Kublik joins us, getting ready for tomorrow night's broadcast of Southern Miss in Alabama. Cole, thanks so much. Let's start there. A weird week, as you well know, doing radio every morning. Some thought it felt like a loss, but Alabama survived the swamp. How has it gone so far as Alabama gets ready for not only Southern Miss tomorrow, but some huge games the following 2 weeks with Ole Miss and Texas A&M?
Paul, interesting that you said that it kind of felt like a loss to a lot of people, because Nick Saban actually told us that he felt like as the majority of the team got onto bus, they almost appeared as though they lost the football game. But he did tell us that the team responded well this week. Felt like a lot of guys have sort of grown up. It was a little bit of a wake-up call. Certain individuals maybe starting to get it, that they have to practice a certain way, handle themselves a certain way, and then obviously go into a game and execute a certain way. That didn't happen for a lot of Alabama football players against Florida. And the coaching staff here at Alabama was very, very complimentary of Dan Mullen and that plan, and Todd Grantham and his plan, and everything they faced against Florida, but still came out with a lot of correctable mistakes and an understanding that they need to get better in a lot of areas moving forward.
Cole, in terms of what they did wrong, and you mentioned correctable, that's critical, because if they can correct it, things are going to be right. But what was the biggest issue, and how do you think they're dealing with it?
I think the biggest issue defensively, Paul, was just, I would call it freelancing. Essentially, guys just doing what they want to do. You have run fits in your defense. To make it very simple, you have gaps. Obviously, A gap is between the center and the guard. B gap is between the guard and tackle. Well, if a defensive lineman's job on one particular play in that defensive call is the A gap, and the linebacker at the snap of the football comes behind him to play the A gap as well, you know somebody's wrong. And Florida was able to hit a couple of those. There was one big touchdown run, essentially, where that happened. You see pass twists, games in pass pro where you're trying to generate a pass rush, and two defensive tackles essentially are running into one another. Those are things that can't happen, especially against a team that has talent like Florida does, that's as well coached as Florida is. Those are the kind of things that just have to be corrected. Now, were there some effort issues? Absolutely. Late in that game, those are things that can't happen either. Pete Golding told us there were more missed tackles in this game than any other game he's coached here at Alabama. Those are effort things. Those are want to. That's a desire part of playing football and putting that uniform on. So those things have to correct themselves as well. But ultimately, Paul, I think it was just getting outside of the system, getting outside of the scheme, getting outside of your assignments. And those are things that I do think can be corrected with a little bit more focus, a little bit more leadership, and mainly more ownership by each individual on the football team.
Cole, let me move around a little bit, because there are a couple of games I want to get your thoughts on. And, you know, one not that far to your west in Starkville. And, you know, we're getting varying reports on Derek Stingley Jr., which has, you know, been an issue for a while. A lot of other concerns about this LSU team. What's your take on this game, and really, you know, where is this LSU program right now?
It's a great question. We were there last week, Paul, and we're able to talk to those coaches, the coordinators, obviously Coach Orgeron, able to sit down with Max Johnson and able to see that team up close and personal. And there were a lot of questions we had going in. A lot of those were answered, but some of the things that we were unsure about, I think you have to understand that it's going to take more than 1 week to correct those, especially 1 week against Central Michigan. You bring up Derek Stingley. First series of the game, he comes up and pops a Central Michigan ball carrier, jars the football loose, it's a scoop and score for touchdown. I thought that set the tone for the entire team. And if Derek Stingley now is not going to be a part of that team, not going to be out on the field with them, that's going to be one of their leaders that's going to be gone for a younger football team anyway. So I'm very interested to see that football game, the plan that both sides have in place, because Max Johnson and Jake Peets both told us that there were some recognition issues with pressure, with protection, with hot reads early in the season. Paul, you're going up against Zach Arnett in Mississippi State. If you can't read and recognize what he's going to do, you are in a heap of trouble, because he's going to do everything. And he's going to do different things from 1 week to the next that you didn't see him do the previous 5 weeks. So if recognition's a problem, it will be highlighted against that defense. And I'm going to tell you this on the other side. I think Mississippi State might be the weirdest football team in the country. Because when I put the film on, there's so much to like. The defense plays like their hair's on fire. They're flying around all over the place. The offensive line plays physical. They finally tighten their splits a little bit on the offensive line, which gives them a big added benefit in pass protection. Will Rogers was throwing darts last week against Memphis. You hold the Tigers to 2 of 12 on third down, under 90 yards rushing, and you lose the game. You go four quarters with La Tech in the first game of the season, you lose five fumbles. I don't think I've ever seen another team in football, as long as I've been watching it and playing it, lose five fumbles in a game, and you threw an interception, but you found a way to win that game. And then you look completely dominant against what we thought was a pretty good NC State team. So I just have no idea what Mississippi State really is. There's something about that team that I just can't figure out, but I think there's a lot of good to go along with it. We know there's been some other injury issues with LSU. They lose Andre Anthony, who would have been big in this game, but LSU has the guys up front, rushing three or four, to be able to be problematic. And even without Derek Stingley, Paul, they still have a lot of guys on the back end that can cover. That's a big advantage for a team that's probably not going to play a lot of man and is going to play a lot of nickel and dime. So we could go back and forth with this ping pong match about this game and how it's interesting and what we think about it. But the personality of that LSU football team that you brought up, it's one that I don't know just yet. It's one that I don't think they know just yet. And obviously, as you come into SEC play, you better figure it out pretty quick.
Speaking of figuring it out, let me bring you to where we are right now in Columbia, South Carolina, where the enthusiasm is really high. And I know you got a chance to take a good look at what happened last Saturday night. Where is the South Carolina program under Shane Beamer?
It's obviously in the middle of a rebuild. But there are things that you see that I think you have to be happy about. To be able to be competitive early and find ways to win a few games, get a couple of wins, that was something a lot of people didn't expect. I mean, I think their total was like 2.5 or 3, and most people thought that they would be under that. So as far as I'm concerned, Shane Beamer is already exceeding expectations in Columbia, especially considering what he had to do at the quarterback position. Luke Doty back last week. Saw him able to do some things down the field. Van looks like he might be turning into a legitimate number one receiver. They're leaning on that defensive line right now. Not great at the second and third level of that defense, but the defensive line is disruptive and problematic. The offensive line has got to pick up the slack, and I understand fully that they went against probably the best defensive line in college football. Now, there are some services that say they grade things that didn't have Georgia in their top five defensive lines. Don't pay attention to that. Pay attention to what you see on the film. Georgia's dominant. The defensive line is great. There are not many that I would put in front of them. So I'm not just going to judge the South Carolina offensive line based on what they did against that group, but they have to improve, have to get better if they're going to give that team a chance to be competitive. I'm very anxious to see how they show up against a very physical Kentucky football team that just played down to their opponent a week ago. Mark Stoops' team's got to show up, Paul, because that is a difficult environment to play again. And they're not going to make a ton of mistakes that are going to hurt themselves. You might be more talented than South Carolina right now, but Shane Beamer's team is not going to give you the game most times when you go out and take the field.
Finally, on Kentucky, because you know they're a little bit of an enigma. You said they play up or down. I mean, they have what, I think Florida next week. Not that they're looking ahead. They understand where they are, but. But what is your read on Mark Stoops' team right now?
Well, first off, Paul, they're different. And we have to know that. We have to understand that. This is a team that actually has some legitimate balance. You go back the last few years, you take your best skill player in Lynn Bowden, you put him at quarterback. Eddie Grant did a masterful plan of sort of building that thing around a mobile quarterback and going just zone read option for the rest of the year. They still have that physical offensive line. Darren Kennard and Luke Fortner in that group have played well this year. The first thing that's got to happen is Christopher Rodriguez got to hold on to the football, because they could have put the nail in the Missouri coffin multiple times in the first half and early in the second half, and he fumbles going into the end zone. Those are little things that have to be corrected, but what you know you're going to get is an absolute fistfight. That front seven, the defensive line, linebackers, not super athletic, not twitchy, not fast, but they're not the ones that you want to meet in a phone booth and have to fight your way out. That's just kind of the heavy-handed nature of how they play the game. And I think Will Levis is still sort of attempting to find his exact role of what he needs to be in Liam Cohen's offense. He's got a massive arm, and he can push the ball down the field, and he will stretch the field, and that forces your secondary to play different. Then Christopher Rodriguez can go out with that stretch play, hit it all over the place. You build in your bootlegs, your throwbacks, and all the different things that are tied to that. So he's a great fit for what they want to do, but consistency still has to be a big part of it. I think he's an absolute gamer. I think he's tough. I think he's one of those quarterbacks that actually likes to get hit and then plays a little bit better when he does. McElroy tried to tell me on our show earlier in the week, yeah, I used to like to get hit too, and I'd play better. I'm like, Greg, you got hit four times your career. You just handed it to Mark Ingram at the time. It's not really a direct comparison. So, but I think Liam Cohen sort of is that guy. But this team has just had a tendency over the last few years, especially early, to play down to the level of their opponent. They can't do that against South Carolina tomorrow, or they will find themselves in an absolute dogfight late. If they come out, keep their foot on the gas, Kentucky can control that game and get a big convincing win, which will give them momentum heading into, you just mentioned Florida, the front of it, but an absolutely treacherous October when you look down at that Kentucky schedule.
Yeah, don't remind McElroy. I remember being on the sidelines of Tiger Stadium. He got hit in the LSU game where Alabama was trying to get back in the national championship race and fumbled and cost Alabama the game. But don't remind him of that, okay?
We won't talk about that.
Cole, it's great to see you. So great. Thanks so much. A fantastic report. Cole Kubik live at Bryant-Denny Stadium. And we are coming back. We have Frank Martin next, the head basketball coach of the University of South Carolina.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We are here, and what an afternoon this has been for us in Columbia. So many great guests, and one of our favorite people. To see whether we're at media days or the tournament or here is Coach Frank Martin. Coach, what a pleasure to see you. Great to see you. I know you're ready for the season, but I'm afraid to ask you how your last year and a half has been since we've seen you last.
Well, I joined the Feinbaum Club. That's part of the journey here the last year and a half or whatever. But I'm doing great. I'm excited. I'm as excited as I've ever been. We had a bad year, really complicated year. Yeah. And, you know, there's 150 different reasons why things didn't go the right way. But I'm not going to dwell on the extreme of last year. On the contrary, if you take the 6 years pocket before that, we're top 20 in the country in attendance. These great fans that come out and support us. And our team was the third winningest team in the SEC over that six-year period. So we're going to rely on who we were and what we built. And I'm as excited as I've ever been to move forward.
So I don't want to go back, but you know, beyond the obvious, the COVID, I mean, you can't get beyond it. It created so many issues. As a coach, you have to move forward. You can't stop. But internally, how do you get past all that with so many things going on?
It was difficult. It was an unbelievable learning experience for me. I'd never been through a year like that. as a coach, especially as a head coach. I'd never experienced that. And what made things even more complicated is my health was complicated. And when you don't have the energy or the resolve to come in and fight the battles that you got to fight on a daily basis to succeed, it makes things really hard, because I always felt like I was not helping my players.
Right.
And I'd never been in that situation, but that's behind me. I feel good. I feel strong. My energy level's through the roof. And here's the other part, Paul. My associate head coach got beat up with it too.
Right.
So now we only had two coaches that were healthy.
You went through it twice?
I went through it twice. And the second time, it was in the middle of season, and it was me and my associate head coach. We both got our tails kicked in January. So our team was being coached by two guys. We were there trying to help, but we it was really hard for us to Chuck Martin and myself to do the job. But unbelievable learning experience. I'll tell you what it made me do, Paul. Made me appreciate how lucky I've been. How lucky I've been that I've always been around so many incredible people, players, assistants, that I'm so fortunate I coach at a place like this with the fans that absolutely love their school. It just made me sit back and appreciate that even more.
You've had such great success, before you got here, out at Kansas State. You come here and you take a team to the Final Four, and then you sputter a little bit. I know you have to be confident of your own abilities. I know you have to sell a program, but internally, when you go through illness, you go through a pandemic, you go through a tough season.
Mm-hmm.
How do you cope as an individual?
You really don't when you're going through it. You just keep, you keep your faith where it needs to be, because that's what we need. And you got to keep your trust in the people that you believe in, and not get wrapped up in the opinions of the few.
Right.
But then go through life and reflect. I'm a big believer when you're going through adversity, you got to reflect.
Right.
And you reflect so it gives you the courage to deal with the adversity in front of you. And I've been through some adversity in my life, never in the basketball sense like we went through last year. The health part of it, I almost died in 2007. So I was at peace with my journey in COVID, because I'm fortunate that good Lord looked out for me when I was really on a deathbed. So it's been an unbelievable learning experience for me. And I've got a great staff. They were unbelievable. Ray Tanner, my boss, is a great man and was through it with me every step of the way. But then when the season ends, you gotta separate and you gotta take a deep breath. And the same way I didn't go into 2018 celebrating the Final Four of the previous team, I'm not going into 2021 pouting or depressed because of the difficulties of last year. On the contrary, we're going to roll up our sleeves and we're going to go back to being the team that we've always been.
All of us have our own COVID experience. If you didn't have an experience, I don't know where you were, because it affected us all in so many different ways. But you're a leader. You're a motivator. People lean on you.
Yeah.
You mentioned your staff. You mentioned Ray Tanner, but what else can you lean on during adversity? Because you have to, regardless of the record, you can't just say, well, this is a disaster.
Yeah.
You've got to find some light, don't you?
Yeah, it's, Perry Clark, who was my assistant coach for 7 years and just retired, a wonderful man, great coach. He came in my office, not this year, couple years ago, came in my office one day, goes, "You all right?" I'm like, "Yeah, what do you need?" I said, I'm good, Perry. What, like, he's like, "Frank, I've been a head coach. Nobody ever helps you solve problems. On the contrary, everybody brings you their problems and it's your job to fix their problems." And so that was a fun moment for me, because I had never thought about it along those lines, and he's so right. Paul, that's my strength coach has a little saying, is like, when you create the storm, don't complain when you get rained on. I signed up for the job. I've got to, doesn't mean I'm going to be perfect in dealing with it. Doesn't mean that, that everything pans out the right way, but I know this, I ask for the responsibility of being a head coach. I don't run away from it. And we had a bad year. Well, for me to lead my guys into having a good year, I need to stand strong and be positive and excited about what's in front of us.
You've done it before, and you've certainly studied it. Mm-hmm. You can't be a head coach at your level and not understand the mechanics. So the obvious question, I'm not your boss, I'm your friend, but how do you get out of where you are, where you were, to get where you once were a couple of years ago at the pinnacle of college basketball?
Yeah, I mean, we're that close. Which is part of the journey of building a program. And a dear friend of mine is Billy Donovan. And if you remember Billy, when he took over Florida, they go to a Final Four in the year 2000. And then they kind of floundered a little bit for 3 or 4 years. And then they regrouped and with a freshman class, and then they ended up winning 2 national championships, and it's history. And I'm not saying that's what we're going to do, but in the COVID year when we got shut down, we were right there to be an NCAA tournament team again. We have sustained P.J. Dozier going pro, two guys that unfortunately after the Final Four we couldn't retain in our program any longer. And we never lost. We just didn't quite win enough. But we had gotten back to that place where we're going back to the NCAA tournament, and COVID shut down the season in 2019, was it? I don't know. The last 2 years seems like 9 years, so I've lost track of count here.
Yeah, 1920.
Yeah. And then last year, it was complicated. What I did is I reflected, and we got away from playing the brand of basketball that I've always coached. And we're going to get back to being the hardest playing, toughest, most disciplined physical players in the country again. We've always been that. We deviated from it for a year because we couldn't practice, and it didn't work. So we're getting back to doing things that way.
All the best. It's so good to see you.
Great to see you, Paul.
Coach Frank Martin joining us right here as we still have 30 minutes remaining. We're live in Columbia.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What a great afternoon we have had here in Columbia. We now welcome in Chris Doering. We spoke to him a week ago from Gainesville as he was giving us a preview of what actually did happen. Pretty close call. Chris, great to have you here. Let's move forward because we got to figure out this Florida Gator team, and they take on the Tennessee Vols. We've been reflecting on some of the great games in history. Will tomorrow be one of those great games?
You know, I don't think many people are expecting it to be a great game. Obviously, this has been a series that's been dominated by Florida, having won 15 of the last 16. But, you know, the biggest thing I'm looking at, Paul, is how does Florida respond after that disappointing loss, a physical loss against Alabama, one that they felt like they had every opportunity to win and didn't get that done. So we saw them last year come out unfocused against LSU in a similar type favorite position, with almost 3 touchdowns that they're favored by against Tennessee on Saturday. So do they come out and respond with effort and focus and intensity, or do they look like that team that lost the last 3 games of the season last year? I think that's the biggest question about how mature this team is in 2021.
Coming off of a game like that, and, you know, what's interesting, Chris, is we're still talking about that game last week, and I know coaches hate that. I mean, they try to control what happens inside the locker room, but what fans talk about still gets in there, as you well know, better than anyone. What do you think the mindset of this Gator team is going to be tomorrow night?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question, Paul, because I found myself as a Florida alum almost celebrating a near win against Alabama. Like, moral victories typically don't exist at the University of Florida, and yet there's a lot of fans outside of myself that felt really good about it, that felt like this is now a team that can compete again for SEC championships and play for national titles like they once did. So does this team come out and say, hey, we've done everything. Look at where we are now. Look how good we are. We should roll over this Tennessee team who's down at this point trying to rebuild themselves. I honestly believe that they learned from last season. I honestly believe that they're going to be able to bounce back from this. But this is a game I think Tennessee can gain a lot of confidence. If they can come out early, if they can use that tempo, if they can catch Florida off guard, maybe even the same way that Florida struggled out of the gates last week against Alabama, that certainly can give them some hope and some life into the second half of the ball game, which is something Tennessee hasn't had a lot of in the last few meetings between these two teams.
Talking to Chris Doering, Chris, let me run through some of the other games. Fans here in Columbia are excited. They've got a new coach in Shane Beamer. They feel like this program is making a turn. From what you've seen so far, how does this game match up tomorrow night?
You know, I agree that the team seems to be making a turn. There's a lot of hope around that fan base, which is exciting to see. I think the problem is now you're getting into the heart of the schedule against conference opponents where everybody's really talented, everybody's really physical. And if you look at the numbers, Paul, I mean, South Carolina only has 79 scholarship players. They're thin in the secondary. They're thin at the linebacker position. And one of the things Kentucky's going to do is run the football with you and be very physical on the lines of scrimmage. So I think that could wear on South Carolina as the game goes on. But I honestly believe last week what we saw with Kentucky stumbling a little bit against Chattanooga, I think it was the best thing that could have happened to Kentucky. It got their attention. It let them know that, hey, maybe they're not as good as what everybody's telling you are. The offense maybe is not as unstoppable as some of the reports would have you believe. So I believe that South Carolina is going to get the best effort from Kentucky, and I think they ultimately win this game by double digits. Not popular there, huh?
Chris Doering will not be winning any prizes in Columbia tonight. Chris, let me bounce around because there are some other big games, and I don't know why. I talked to Cole about it a minute ago, but I'm just intrigued by this game in Starkville because so much is on the line. I know that sounds like a cliche, but it really is when you consider both clubs have already gone through somewhat of a tumultuous early season. I'm speaking, of course, of Mississippi State hosting LSU. What do you think?
It is a big game, isn't it? I think every one of these LSU games for the rest of the season on is going to be a big game for Coach O. A lot of people displeased with the way that they've started this season after, again, having so much hope. But if we look back a year ago, it was this game that sent LSU on a downward spiral that they never really recovered from. You have to believe that they'll do things differently against this Mississippi State offense. Playing man coverage and getting beat deep like they did last year is obviously something that the rest of the teams in the conference learn from, because you saw a lot of folks, including Barry Odom, who maybe laid out the blueprint for how you defend this Mike Leach defense for the rest of the season. You drop eight, you force them to be patient, you make them drive 11, 12 plays down the field, and odds are they're going to make a mistake. I mean, you look at last week, Mississippi State dominated that game against Memphis for the most part, right? They held Memphis's offense that was first in the country in total yards, about 400 yards below their average. The offense had some drives where they put some things together, but it was a mistake early in the game by the offense, fumble, scoop, and score. And that now famous play on the punt where the Memphis player, well knowing the rules, picked the ball up after it had been touched but not down and ran it back for a touchdown. That's the difference in these ball games when you're Mississippi State. They're not good enough to make those mistakes and win. So I honestly believe that Mississippi State will get LSU's best attention because of what happened last year. And I think right now you can't compare the two rosters. I think LSU is better. Can they get away from those mistakes that had haunted them defensively, some of the communication errors, some of the coverage errors, and can they play with that intensity and focus and excitement that we saw them play with last week against Central Michigan? I'm betting yes, and I think they leave Starkville with a win.
Final game I want to ask you about, and that's probably the biggest game of the day in Arlington, Arkansas, coming off of some really big wins this season, taking on A&M, which had a win against Colorado, but kind of felt like a loss because of Haynes King going down. What happens there?
It felt like a loss for a lot of different reasons. I mean, one of the biggest reasons it felt like a loss to me was because the lines of scrimmage were being dominated by Colorado. We're not talking about being dominated by Alabama or another team here in the SEC. Colorado was pushing them around. They ran for over 125 yards in the first half against that great Texas A&M defense. Obviously, the defense bounced back in the second half. They only allowed 52 total yards and never let Colorado cross midfield again. But the problem that I have, Paul, is the offense. Texas A&M's offense was predicated on running the football last year, being physical at the point of attack, and then having success off of that run game with the play-action pass. This year, they're not able to establish the line of scrimmage running the football. They haven't had a lot of success outside with receivers being able to separate. And obviously now, Zach Calzada still trying to figure out things as the starting quarterback a game and a half in. So I think we're talking about two very different teams from what I expected in the preseason. I thought A&M was going to be able to build on that success in that top five finish last year. Right now, they don't even resemble to me the team that we saw at the end of the season. And Arkansas is way over playing what I thought was a possibility for them right now. The defense looks really well coached. They play their assignments and technique very well. And you're seeing the run game and the physicality on the offensive side. And oh, by the way, KJ Jefferson seems to be figuring things out in the passing game. So it looks like we're talking about two different teams that are headed in different directions. Now, obviously, Arkansas has not won in Arlington against A&M since they joined the conference. So they got to get that monkey off their back. But I honestly believe that this is the – they got the wrong team favored in this one. I think this is the year that Arkansas does it.
Chris Doering with his thoughts on tomorrow. Thank you very much, Chris. We have a couple of minutes remaining here in Columbia. We'll also include your phone calls at 855-242-7285. What a memorable day and early evening this has been with Shane Beamer coming by, Dawn Staley, Tebow was here, Laura, so many others.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.